UtilityMuffinLabs.com is the source for podcasts like 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, the Nerd Words podcast, and the Playing Hooky podcast, to name a few. We offer gaming, music, and pop culture content, as well as graphic and audio design, voice talent, and more. Go to UtilityMuffinLabs.com to commission us for your audio needs, digital artwork, and advertising opportunities. UtilityMuffinLabs.com, consistently rated adequate.
This is 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast brought to you by UtilityMuffinLabs.com. Welcome to the Dark Ages.
Welcome once again, friends, family, vampires, to another episode of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast. My name's Nathan.
My name is Bob.
I, first of all, want to thank everybody for their engagement on our Chicago by Night review. It's good to get a lot of that feedback and hear your thoughts. And, you know, we saw it all over our Discord channel, on Facebook, and just everywhere. So that's cool. I'm glad that you guys enjoyed it. Some of you agreed with our assessment. Some of you did not. I don't know if you had any particular experiences like that, Bob, but...
Of the not variety?
One way or the other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was positive. I didn't see a... Well, it's all positive, right? Like, mm-hmm. There was nothing negative, and thank everybody for that, but I did get constructive feedback that I did get.
Yeah.
And that was golden. But it was all to the same tune. It was, hey, don't forget, guys, they make it to where in the book, you're free to do whatever. So thank you. Yes, we know.
Yeah, we're good. Right. I really liked that somebody caught our error about who owned Walgreens. That was really cool. but anyways, that'll lead us directly into some comments that we had. This one was real good. And it is it's from our friend CT Phipps. He is a huge fan, big listener, constantly gives us feedback. So this is going to be a little bit deep. Of course, when we're done with that, we're going to do our review of Libellus Sanguinis 4, which is a collection of, you know, clan book style book with the Ravnos, the Nosferatu, and the Malkavian. So it's going to be riveting. It'll be great. But first, let's address some questions, Bob.
Let's do it.
All right. So some random comments, and I guess we can just address these as they go. And it's the first comment that he has, he says that the Camarilla has always had a bunch of Gehenna cults, if you remember Elysium. So remember that book way back in the day? Yeah, we knew that. So the kindred religion is the weird, creepy elder stuff now out in the open. What's your sentiment on that, Bob?
I disagree. I disagree because it wasn't, well, I don't disagree that it existed. They're right on that point. For me, it's the way it's structured, before in the Camarilla, if there was something that went against what the Camarilla espoused, commonly it was thrown out like any good elitist club.
Yeah.
It's what the whole acknowledges, not what a few acknowledge.
Right.
And now that they're saying that's pushed to the fore, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think that, it's been expounded upon.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is. Allegedly, the Beckoning pulled everybody that would have kept that under the floorboards hidden. And now that those people are gone, it's like suddenly the black uncle of the family, who was but black marked uncle of the family, I should correct that, is allowed to come back and rule the Scottish estate. Right? Why? Because dad died or he's away at war. Whatever the situation is, he's going to come in and lead.
Well, yeah. And I think for me, my opinion on the matter is that makes sense if all of the ancients have packed up and left. And if we look at Chicago doesn't really show that. In fact, quite the opposite. We have a very specific Methuselah that has been up in, you know, just dabbling in Tremere and Torridor for, you know, at least the last 30 years. Plus we have the Bruja Critias. These are both individuals that are ancients, and they're you can go see them. So for me, that whole religious thing, I don't mind that it was introduced in the Camarilla book, but I just don't see that reflected in the actual world that's been presented. And I'm not upset by it. I think that in most circumstances, I'm going to run a game out of Chicago anyways, just because that's what I know best, and it requires the least amount of work. Because
it's a great book, and it's great done. Why wouldn't you do it?
Exactly. So I just don't think that that's going to be something that's ever a focal point in my game. All right, next comment, and this is what we both knew. The character Gerard was actually in the first edition, so it's cool to get to see that character again. He says, I love the changes to both Anita and Genghis. I wish you could have talked more about them as well as the changes to the Anarchs. And you'll bring this up later in your comments, but I think I speak for you as well, Bob, when I say we can only record so long of a podcast.
What? It's a review of a great book that we honestly we overgushed on.
Yeah.
It is such a thing. We meant to keep it concise and went 2 hours. I mean, it's
right. Exactly. He says, I'm surprised you didn't comment on Noah Greewall, the thin blood who works for the Second Inquisition and has taken over O'Hare.
Here's the thing and why I didn't comment on that. This is a thing that doesn't make sense to me. Right. But if you read between the lines, we did talk about Tyler,
right?
And we did talk about Tyler's absence and that left a vacuum. And to have a thin blood wander into O'Hare and do that, I literally threw that out. I didn't want to discuss it at all. That was some writer's idea that is going to work for people or it's not going to work for people. And it's new to me as it is new to everybody else.
Yeah.
Would I use it? No.
Yeah. No,
it's not there. Plus, and here's the big thing. If you storytell for a long enough time, you start knowing how to reference and look up technology and how to kind of capture certain things and not. Our technology now is even more updated than what they're writing about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Without it being super futuristic, ridiculous, the realism. I'm trying to imagine Homeland Security dealing with any form of somebody walking in that isn't detected or is dead. Right?
Yeah.
They're not warm, they're dead. They would overhaul their security. They'd pull that person aside to see what they had on them. There's all sorts they would do on a normal detection level that goes through my head. But at some point, we have to agree, we're trying to run a game for fun.
Right.
Not for super realism. And that's why I didn't get into it.
Yeah, I think, for me, we're doing a review of the book, and I think it's important that we leave some stuff to the reader. And of course, we're going to want to touch on, everybody's going to have their thing that they want us to talk about, things that they love or things that they don't like or whatever, and they want to get our opinion on it. But it's impossible to touch on everything that's in there. He goes on to say, I wanted your thoughts on Marcel's Paris Hilton-esque childer. It is what it is. I don't really care about that personally. That is what it is. It was cool, writing, but like everything can't get touched on.
Right. I'm gonna leave it at that. I agree with you.
And finally, he goes on to say that I really wanted your thoughts on Sierra Burris, the seemingly nice Lysandra. And I think just like the Lysandra as a whole are a better story than the individuals, and the individuals can be used as you see fit. We're all going to have characters. I like Tally the Hound. That's my character, but it is what it is. So
I'm trying not to ask her to grouch it.
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is that the Lysandra are well written, and I think they wrote for a variety of audience, not just for any one particular person.
Right.
And that's what they did very, very well. And when you write for everybody, naturally, though, you have a favorite. And that's what comes to the fore. So of course I agree with Nate. Tally's awesome. It's the best person in that book for Lysandra. Nothing beats Horatio Ballard, though. We know he's the best. and it's that simple.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to spend more time on the Nosferatu, but I think their very nature prevents that. So, we'll let that sleeping dog lie, as it were. But yeah, a lot of the characters that weren't included were characters I wanted to be included. I wanted to know what happened to Khalid. I wanted some specific information about Tyler. But, in my mind, I have to think, well, it's probably left out. Those characters are probably not addressed for a reason. And we'll get that information later on down the road, or we won't.
I'll speak what the writers can't tell you. This is on their behalf. They are not saying this at all, whatsoever. But I'll say it for them. Write your own Chicago by Night. That's what it comes down to. You're curious? You want to have that in there? Write it yourself. They'll be happy to read it. They'll be happy to look at it for you. I'm even positive you could reach out and just put it on a forum somewhere and say, hey, what do you think? And you'll get that too. But the truth of the matter is this. We can all love the same City Pride that they release and let go. It is our show the moment we get it.
Right.
And what you want to use and not use and all that fun stuff, it's all up to you. And right. to talk about it is weird, because the one thing I know me and Nate don't want to do is force you to accept what we like.
Right.
Right? We want you to get the gamut.
It's your sandbox, and everything that's in that sandbox are just toys for you to build your castle with. And that's what we always try to emphasize with this book, that even though you may read it in a book, there isn't a right and wrong, because it's your game. These are just tools that help you tell your story. So I think that that's really important to remember, that even if we don't agree with the writing, or if we don't agree with how a character went, so what? We don't have to use it.
And also, you know, me and Nate agree to this too. Our opinion is the best opinion, but you right. can use your own.
Right. Absolutely. No, I mean, that's true. You, the listener, your opinion is the best opinion, because it's your opinion. No one can tell you that you're wrong. We just happen to have a venue where we can share our opinion and people will listen to it and, you know, tell us why we're right or we're wrong, or if they agree. We just love the material. That's the truth of it. I don't care if one character or another got the short end of the stick. It's a frail world, this world of darkness. So sometimes they live and sometimes they don't. All right. So thank you for your comment. And, you know, he goes on to tell us, awesome review. We really appreciate it. It's something we're passionate about, something that we really enjoy and we love. And, you know, hopefully some of that rubs off on today's review. As I pound on the desk.
It will. Right. It was a touch wood moment to let folks know.
Right. But before we move forward, I just want to give a very special shout out to the one and only Fang. You know who you are. We know who you are. Apparently, we've never thanked you for being our patron. We've never thanked you for all the hours of joy that you've given us in our Curse of Cain game and various other games. The arguments, the debates, the conversations, you know, everything that you've done to support us, we really want to thank you. Is there anything that you want to say specifically, Bob?
What I'll say is Fang has supported us when it comes to mage content, donated several books, giving insights as the storylines, plots, and ideals. He's also the first to chime in on most podcasts that we've done, to come in and initiate discussion, foster a conversation. I think that's always healthy. For that matter, contributor, more than just just supporting us, but also supporting community.
Yeah. He's definitely somebody that we hope to have in our corner for many years to come, because he's really just been, it stunned me that we never thanked him before. And for that, we apologize, but we thank you. We appreciate you. And we're glad that you're a part of our community. Also, as an addendum from last week's episode, we want to give a very special shout out to Mr. and Mrs. Michael and Ashley Michelli. Thank you for your union. Thank you for being supportive of our podcast. Thank everybody for listening. So what are we doing today, Bob?
Libellus Sanguinis 4.
Mm-hmm. Thieves in the Night.
When the thief in the night.
Yeah, so this book starts out with one of our very favorite clans, right?
It is, and I know that Thomas of Flyos Game loves them too.
Yeah.
He was expressing his love for it, actually, the other day.
He was like, man, them Ravnos, this is my favorite clan. I don't know about you guys, but I love them.
We could get into pros and cons of why and not, but the best thing is that there are fans who do love them, and this book is chock-filled with legend and lore for them, related to a Dark Ages first seed. However, Nate, there's something you pointed out as we were just ramping up today. Mm-hmm. You said, does this have a startling relationship with a clan book?
So here's the thing that I realized reading this book. This book, basically, this chapter, which is the Ravnos, expands on that story that was presented to us in the Revised Edition Clan book. And for those of you familiar with the Revised Edition Clan book, they basically tried to take the older concept, and some would say the insensitive older concept of what the Ravnos are, and try to update them so that they're more rooted in history, tying them to like Indian culture and Indian history and all of the unique religious aspects that are included with that culture. And in the Ravnos Revised Clan book, They were like, here is all this cool stuff you never knew about this clan, but also we're going to murder them. So you don't ever get to play any of that stuff because we've murdered the clan. And I was like, well, that's fine. Like, in for a penny, in for a pound. You know, it's like,
right.
If you're going to kill off the clan, kill off the clan. Great. They did that. So in this book, what they've done is they've gone back and sort of revised that history a little further and said, hey, this is where the clan comes from, right? But the thing of it is, they only exist in India. And they kind of like actively hunt down and murder the European version of the Ravnos. So again, I just find myself going, well, it's great that you included all this like historical stuff that even the parent clan doesn't know about, but how cool is it that I don't get to play any of that because nobody's running a game in India?
It's as simple as that. I mean, they talk about the traveling Ravno and the, you know, you could be individual or move with Rome's fall, all that fun stuff. But really what they're engaging in is they're trying to explain to you and hammer home that the Western Ravno are an offshoot.
Mm-hmm.
They're wrong, right? Because the Eastern ones are here to kill them. Now, why is the Western Ravno one wrong? Because they believe in a concept of paradox, right? Which is really, and even say it flat out, it's an excuse for them to murder and de-alberize. That's it. That's what they changed it into. Instead of it being a wheel, a cycle that the Eastern Ravnos believe in, they made it something less spiritual. And because of that, they call for their death.
Right.
And that's what goes on. Now, most of you who were Ravno fans were fans of the Paradox followers. That's where it was. You kind of, when you read this, you're going, no one's wrong in playing either.
Right.
But they're letting you pick what you want in your game, but they're also letting you know, hey, storytellers, the culture, the religion, the history, the origins, that's over here in the Eastern half. And encourage your players to go over here because there's a lot more to get into. If you stick with the Western half, really you're kind of going by the seat of your pants to make it up as you go along, because all we got is this paradox path, which doesn't really make sense when you look at everything else.
And, you know, one of the things that they talk about in here, you know, obviously you have roads in the Dark Ages, and that's a little bit different than your typical paths of enlightenment. But they, you know, they show how these Ravnos that come from the East, they will find Ravnos on these other roads, you know, road of chivalry, road of whatever, and they'll forcibly convert them or kill them to, you know, their way of thinking. And, you know, I don't have any like ill will towards this chapter per se, but I don't like the clan, and this didn't do anything to reinvigorate my interest in playing them. And it didn't remove any of the trepidation I had about them beforehand.
I really think, well, I'm going to tell you why I don't like the clan, and it all surrounds around Chimerishry, or Chimerishry, mm-hmm. If you will. I always thought it was Chimera. After Chimera.
Yeah. Well, I've given up hope on trying to get shit pronounced correctly.
So why I point that out is because, you know, the Chimera is a mystical mm-hmm. entity of many forms, right. And that's where I thought it came from. But anyway, Chimerishry is Chimistry, we'll just leave it at that. It bothered me for what this book tries to correct. Your cane bro.
Right.
My cane bros out there, you know how Chimerishry was used. It was that discipline that allowed you to go ahead and have all the combat capabilities, but Bolstein the ST by coming in with that social character who had the ability to use Chimerishry and create the combat capability he didn't have and get away with it. Right? That's ultimately how most of us have probably seen Chimerishry. And it leads to an argument.
Right.
Whenever I've seen Chimerishry used from a player to a storyteller, it has always been to an argument basis. I used to think it was just me. But man, hard. I let somebody use Chimerishry. I end up arguing with them. I know what's going on. Then I went to several different LARP games and have watched the one-hour argument scream fest a couple times because I was like, man, there is just no point to having that power.
Right? No, you're
anybody in it.
You're absolutely right, honestly. And you know, of course, this is all, you know, based on experience, but, you know, every time I've ever seen this discipline used, even when I've tried to use it, I think it inherently is, yeah, it's great for people that are creative, but then you have to justify your creativity. And, you know, I think that that's the hardest thing when you don't really have any boundaries, but you do.
And so this discipline becomes the vampire entry level for mage. It's how I always have seen it. That if you're creative enough to use Chimeristry, and I played a Ravnote and I used it, and the ST banned me after a night, just because you can't... Here's the trick to Chimeristry, and this book tells you it as well. Yeah. Maybe not in so many words. Again, they use brilliant narrative to hide an inner meaning. And what that inner meaning is this. Illusions only work when there's a basis of reality to them.
Right.
Right? You can't have a hand that doesn't have flame in it and create a fireball and throw it at someone. They're going to wonder where the hell the fireball came from. However, I can stand back and look at you by a bonfire behind you and make a gesture with my hand as if I threw something. You think that something was a catalyst to flame, and when it hits you, it blows you up. It's still the same fireball. It's still the same effect.
Right.
But now you, there's a chance you could believe in it because you were standing close to flame. That those little subtle differences are really, in my opinion, what introduces people to, oh man, if I like that, then I probably am going to like Mage of the Ascension.
Right.
And that's the only reason I think Inspiracy exists. At least that's my thought from it, because I'm trying to salvage the clan.
I've always looked at it in that regard, that you as a player, you need to be able to tell a narrative story with the use of your discipline. And unfortunately, what ends up happening in a lot of occasions is players get frustrated and they don't know how to proceed. And so they try to fall back on the one weapon they know they have access to, which is their disciplines. And because they get frustrated, because they don't know a way out, they try to drop a bomb instead of using surgical precision. And the key for this clan and using this discipline, which is an incredibly unique discipline, which you may never have to worry about going forward, as it turns out. But using this discipline requires subtlety. It requires telling a tale and telling a narrative. And I agree with you. I think that like introduction to mage kind of comparison really, I think it works wonders. I think that's absolutely true.
And one of the other things to note, you can always tell if someone's a Ravno fan or not. Ask them if they like Gambit from the X-Men. Right? For some reason, I don't know why this is, when people think of Gambit, they're like, oh, Ravno would be cool. And I'm like, ah, douchebag alert. I get it. And that's only because in Bob language, right, he's the devil. I can't stand Gambit. Right? Mon ami. Like, no, we're done. Right? Like, you can't. This character's a cracker, and I'm sorry. I'm mixing a lot of genres here in our review. I'm just pointing that out because anybody who's played it, like when I think about several key friends who wanted to come over, their character is always the sleazy, you know, I'm gonna go into this bar and I steal stuff and no, I'm cool and look what I could do. I'm just waiting for the glowing cards to be thrown around and call it a day. And I'm stopping myself.
Say you're sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm going on. I'm sorry.
All right. So, moving on. There is a section in here where they talk about the discipline and the Chimeristry and, you know, how you use it. And I think that if you are a fan of the clan, that's a valuable tool for you to use. Honestly, if you're a fan of this clan, you're going to enjoy this chapter.
You will. You're hearing us grouse through it. But you're going to love it because it has everything you need, including the most needed part of this clan is the flaw of the clan. It's expanded upon and made to, I can't use the phrase, but it is made wood simple, right?
Yes. Wood simple.
That's what.
I definitely understand what you're saying. Also, they do talk about the propensity for the victim of the discipline and their desire to disbelieve. It helps to make sense of the disbelief of illusion. And I think that's good. I wish it was expanded on further, but you know, you can only write so many words about the concept. But I think if you want to know more about the clan and you want a deeper understanding of their origins and their roots and also how to play them well, this is an invaluable chapter. I just don't see the value in the clan. So it's hard for me to say I like it because I like the clan. I could live without them. And I apologize for people that love them. It's just, it doesn't connect.
And you can have a ton of uses for them in the Dark Ages. They talk about them being messengers. They talk about them traveling alone or being scouts, needing help or assistance through certain areas and how they would seek that out. There's tons of reasons to play them and to have them and whatnot. Again, you're just hearing our opinion. You won't catch us playing Ravna. No. That's all we're saying.
No. Not going to happen. But it does the same thing every one of these other books does. It's laid out in a way that gives you the history of the clan. It gives you, their perspectives on geographic location and other clans. It gives you some powers. So if you like those, there's a totally cool power where you can get a knife and it does ag and it's a level 6. So that's cool because knife powers are cool. Anyways, so that's it. That's it. It's got your five example characters. Great for new players, and that's it. So, moving on, shall we?
We shall.
Thank you, Ravnos.
What we roll right into is the Nosferatu, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know about the lepers. We know about their plights, where they're at. One of my favorite things about the Nosferatu back in the Dark Ages that they kind of throw around mm-hmm. is they do have a different feel from the modern.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nobility to them. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like the entire clan's infected with this concept of redemption.
Right.
That they are what they are, but there's a hope and their purpose is known. And because of that, that gives you more to me, it feels more what the intent was for the clan. I'm going to state this for all. Right. And even you, Nate,
mm-hmm.
Why I've always liked your Nosferatu. You've mm-hmm. never come at me with the computer nerd. This clan has had more people. I'm a hacking expert. I'm a librarian research master. Right. No, wait, hey, I'm a thief. Okay.
I have long fingers. It helps me type faster.
Because what I'm hearing is I don't know my origins. That's fine. Not everybody's going to be old school or be that erudite about it. But I'm sitting there going, if your founder was a hunter and the best ever, and you're a descendant of him, and you're going to go, wait, Bob, wait a second. You're not actually descendant of him. That guy's hunting us, remember? Sure, you got me.
Right, right.
You caught me. I get it. But what's cooler, our good listeners? What makes more sense? That I have the ability to be hidden and the strength, hidden and track my prey, the strength to hold them down so I could feed or defeat my predators who want to stop me, and I have animalism because why not? I'm a master of the wild already. I should be a master of what's out in it.
Mm-hmm.
That is Predator, the children of the night. What's a cooler story? I have a propensity to want to go to the library.
Well, I need to know the secrets of why that hunter guy is hunting me down so that I, but yeah, it's like information gathering has a purpose. There's a reason why they do what they do.
You have information to track things. Right? At its core, that's what info does. It allows you to understand, track, and know a thing.
Right.
And in a modern sense, you can look at it that way. But it's rarely ever pointed out to that. Now, Bob, why make a distinction? Well, I'm glad I asked myself that question. Because when I look at this Dark Ages, it kind of opens it up.
Right.
The horrible aspect about the Nosferatu is the appearance and horrible reflection they actually wear. That is what their curse is. And the person inside is hidden behind the actual skin of the beast, in its essence. What a terrible existence, right? But there are people who love to play tragedy. There are folks who love to be vaudevillain about what they got going on. And that's why this clan grooves with them. And never more so than in the Dark Ages when they had that Christian element, that religious element,
mm-hmm.
where, we hang out with the lepers and we try to shelter other people. We grant a sense of hospitality to those who seek us. And we care for our herd and for those in our area. Because also, we don't really have anywhere to go.
Right.
Right? When I think of that, Nate, I don't know if you ever did this. It's difficult for me to imagine what it would have been like in, Antioch, if you were a Nosferatu. Right? Yeah, there are some sea caves, but you could get washed out during the day to the sun. There's, where are you going to bed at? Where are you going to sleep at? How does that work? What do you do? It becomes different if you have someone to help you out. And in here, the chapters kind of break down what that would be like, right? They paint those images.
Right. And they also do a really good job of telling the story of the Nosferatu embrace. And to me, I think a lot of people, they have a perspective on the Nosferatu as just like, oh, you get pale, you get pointy ears, and your teeth change. And, you know, they tell a different story in here. And it's one of the better ones that I've had the opportunity to read. But they also explain that, you know, there are differences in the different lineage of Nosferatu and where they descended. And none of them agree. Like, right. Everybody's got a different story. And that's the interesting part about this clan. I've always felt that they are a clan that is forever in search of that truth. And there is no one truth. There's no one definite truth that we can surmise and say, yep, this is true. And the actual truth may be, maybe there's various truths. Maybe there are multiples. And I really enjoy the clan because of that.
Well, the truth is we're all wrong. The Nosferatu are a race of humans that were subterranean to begin with, and when embraced, just developed poor back posture, became more worm-like, and their mouths are multiple and are able to chew through the earth in these tube-like structures, and they just tube around.
I feel they, like, are you reading this in a history book?
If you turn to a specific page, and that, of course, is page 60, you're going to get the race of the Super Nos that they were always meant to be.
Yeah, yeah. I've been in broods with guys like that. But yeah, that picture up there is freaking creepy, and I don't want nothing to do with it.
It is a creepy picture if you didn't own a Fumori book, but that's
fair enough.
You know, it's right there. Bob, you're weird. What is going on today? No, I'm just being real. When I see stuff like this, and I think of the many usages of the Nosferatu clan, my favorites have always been the variety brood.
Yeah.
Right. Someone's an info gatherer that does do the information stuff. Someone's the protector. Someone tends the animals. You know, you have your, the Fagans are always a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite is the Cleopatra.
Yeah.
The real horror theatrical side of things. Combined, quite devastating.
Yeah.
To not have any game.
Because they bring
such a different side.
I agree with you. I mean, the Nosferatu clan is like, for me, it's an endless source of creativity. And reading through this, I read through this and very much felt like this would be something that a modern day Nosferatu might stumble upon and go, huh, there's some very interesting theories posed in here. And what was funny was as we get through the book and you know, we're reading about like, you know, all these different things. You get to the end of it, and there actually is a letter from Calabros, who's like, "Man, what is this bullshit I'm reading?"
I love it.
I feel like they definitely, whoever wrote this section, whoever wrote the Nosferatu section, definitely had an eye and an understanding for the modern Nosferatu clan book.
And one of the things in here that I think you liked in terms of legendary stories, they talk about the Volsi, where they mix almost a Norse aspect to what a troll would be, or a giant that lives in the bog.
Right.
And how they prey on people who come by in boats to make it through at night.
Right.
They just come up out of the water and take a chomp and call it a day, which is why probably that letter was included at the end. Like, what am I reading? Come on.
Yeah, definitely. I also like some of the merits and flaws in here, like feeding tongue. I was like, okay, that's fucked. It's a merit where you feed with your tongue. You're a lamprey, essentially. And right. What's funny about that is because like we've played in games with people who have played those types of characteristics, and it's always very unsettling. So they talk about at the end here, they talk about how you can create characters that kind of originate from these different, they're not so much bloodlines, but you know, one of the big things that the Nosferatu are in fear of or feel that they're being hunted by are the Niktuku and where they originate from and all these like kind of bloodlines. They have merits and flaws that help to flesh them out to make them more consistent with their progenitors, their sires, etc. So if you're a fan of the Nosferatu, if you are, you know, you want a little bit more information, it's definitely the chapter for you. So, any other thoughts on that chapter?
I'm going to make Volsi wherever I go. Just saying. I think it's good. I think we should all have bog monsters.
Yes.
I think it'd be good. Every time it floods, you know, a group of homeless disappear. And why just the homeless? Let's skip it. How about not the homeless? They're protected. How about a couple rich people get it? How about someone coming home from a party drunk in a car?
Right.
Gets an interesting story. Hit by a dog. I don't know. I'm rambling. But that's, I like the Volsi.
Yeah, that sounds like, to me, like, what is it, the man thing?
Maybe he is in the swamp. Maybe the swamp is in him.
Moving right along, we got the Malkavian.
What can we say about the Malkavian that hasn't been said with fish? I mean,
yeah, no, I look, as I stutter my way through this sentence, I think this is actually a good chapter on the Malkavians. I think that what it does is it shows that they are not just consumed by madness. They don't, you know, the position that's presented here is that they're not consumed. They're not even cursed. Like, they're blessed by God. Like, God is giving them the insight of a twitchy eyed Bob. What's that?
I'll let you, no, sorry. I'm letting you go. Just do your thing. You're good. You're totally good.
But one of the things that they really focus on in here is, without overtly stating it, they're kind of like, hey, tone it down. Like, on more than one occasion, they're like, you know, you could play, you shouldn't play your derangement as if it is an always active thing, because what that's going to do is that's really going to, you know, it's going to detract from your characterization. And, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, they're like, settle the fuck down, you know, play, like, madness is not just like, you're not just crazy all the time, twitching, slobbering. Like, it should be something that exists in the background. It should be something that's calm.
One of the things that I've recently come across that I think explains this, which is exactly what you're talking about. And again, segueing off the book, but it's only to give you an example. If you look up Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, and can somehow find a demo or maybe even download it for a bit, depending on what your access to it is, they tell you off the bat that they had a team of experts come up with what it would be like to have these peculiar mental illnesses that are displayed in the game.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is schizophrenia, and the main character is afflicted by it. Is it because you don't know? You're playing her. Is it voices or schizophrenia? A little column A, a little column B, you don't know. I played this game for 5 minutes and had to stop. I literally had to take a break because I felt I was bombarded all the time by constant talking, different personality voices. And I was like, but is that not what that is?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's exactly what that is. Is it reads? Is there these, you know, it's not like these poor people. Yeah, it sucks. But now I'm thinking back to, well, Malkavians is right where my head went. And how many people took schizophrenia and thought it was multiple personality disorder?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And had that wrong, or, you know, played something off or played it too much, and they end up stealing the show when it wasn't the show about, can you play a mental breakdown?
Right.
You're to play a character, not be the derangement.
Right.
And that's the difference. And in here, when it tells you to tone it down, the only thing I could think of is that it brings to light the most important aspect about the Malkavian clan beyond, you know, that mad point. It broadens up the fact that they're seers.
Right.
Right. Oracles and seers had a powerful impact on our past, right? They gave confidence that what a king or a queen or a group of people or a township, whatever, when they doubted in their life or had a moment where they couldn't go on or didn't know what to do in a difficult task, these people gave them a means to get over it and accomplish what they were doing.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I think that for all of those, the reasons, you know, I think that this is a good chapter about the Malkavians and about kind of how to play them. I think that they're another one of those clans that can be real difficult to both play and to tolerate at a table. And you have to understand that all of these clans that are presented, none of them are meant to be, you know, the showstopper, the derailer. They're all meant to add something to a coterie. They're all meant to add something to a game, to add a challenge. And I think if you're a fan of this clan, this chapter will go a long way to help to clarify some things and maybe open up your eyes to where this clan was in the Dark Ages, as opposed to where they're at now. including the different perspectives. I mean, most of this chapter is written from the perspective of Anatole. Anatole is kind of a linchpin main character of this game. So, you know, you may have your biases one way or the other, depending on your perspective of that character. But I mean, I think it's the Malkavian clan is it's a clan that I have like a kind of a weird relationship with. Sometimes I like them. Sometimes I just don't want anything to do with them. So
what I will tell you is that I have not seen a book as well written when it comes around the occult as this chapter. Right. An occult is a hidden society.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm going to say that first and foremost. But whenever I read this, it's particularly the part where it gets into cults of mystery. They're all in here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Everything you need to know about that feel of them without getting into the specific rites and rituals, which you can make them up or even just do a little research and, you know, a little prevention's a pound of cure, whatever that phrase is. You can do that and you can figure it out. But this chapter in and of itself does give you an idea of what it would be like to play a Malkavian Go for when you're in these type of societies. And why would the Malkavians be attracted to these societies is because allegedly they're attracted to their own insights, right? That they're following through the world. And that's always fascinated me about this particular book, is that I don't recall anywhere else reading where the Malkavians had that much direction.
Right. Right. That's one thing that I did notice about this book is it seems to be a little bit more precise.
It's everyone can use direction in anything you play. Any clan needs guidance for the actor portraying that clan. And there's just not any, there's not much to go on. When you leave someone to make it up, I mean, think about it. You're a 9-to-5 guy. You get off your shift at the factory. You love playing game with your friends. Here's this Vampire the Masquerade. You come in to sit down and someone tells you to play this Bruja. And you go to play this Bruja and you look at it. Okay, it's Schism, Iconoclast, Violent, blah, blah, blah. The typical, right? That's the quick read once over. When you go to look more in depth, you learn more Violent Origins, Anarchy, and whatever. You're not really learning a whole lot about their past and about what they could be or other flavors and types. It's hard to do. But at least you have enough of direction from other people who've played it to get the many forms because of its popularity. Malkavian's the number one clan I've seen the least played because of the stigmata. That's not even right. What am I thinking? Stigma. Thank you. Yes, yeah, the stigma.
Stigma,
not the religious bleeding.
Right, no bleeding palms.
but for the stigma of madness. And, you know, because it's hard to portray and people can barely get past it. And it's hard for a storyteller to help that person along because I've always felt the Malkavian becomes just a part of the plot. You don't have a choice. Their powers line up with them getting feed for a direct plot there. You want them to be involved in it more, but they tend to not be combative or they tend to be investigative. But at the same time, they don't need the help of, you know, the slavering Gangrel that tends to be in troops or, you know, the Tremere wants to sit back and learn all the occult. Well, they don't want to trust that guy because they're here finding some truth that their brain is telling them is out there and they alone are discovering. It becomes hard not to see him that way.
Right.
This book tells you, without having to say it, just showing you the many different options and ways to play one, that this is how that person can be on their own like anyone else in the coterie. And that's why this book is invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's a really important thing that you mentioned, too, that, you know, I try to do that whenever a player decides they're going to play a Malkavian. I actually get happy because I can work with them for very intricate characterization. But also, man, I have less work as a storyteller because I can funnel plot through them. Like I can give them puzzles. Right. They are the great glowing suitcase, as I mentioned last week, you know? So, I think all in all, you know, it's a pretty good book, but you know, the truth be told, like there's four of these and they're condensed versions of the modern, you know, revised edition clan books or what have you. But I think it's written really well. I think it's a very, at this point when this book came out, you know, they had been doing it a while. They knew what they were trying to present. So I strongly suggest anybody that has an interest in learning more about the clans and getting as many perspectives on them as possible to read these, even if you aren't playing a Dark Ages book. You know, having read them, I don't feel like they took anything away from my experience. I feel like they've only added to my experience. That's pretty much the book. So any last comments or last words about this book here?
What I will say is that the if you're a fan of the talents that they tend to have and don't have, awareness is one of the ones that they keep getting reworded.
Mm-hmm.
I really think the wording here is what they've kept in a lot of different formats.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this line in here. Through the cracked lens of your perception, you are sensitive to phenomena that others are blind to. The cracked lens of your perception is very poetic sounding. It's a nicer way of putting it. And reading it in here makes that more attractive for a player to take,
right.
I feel. But it's not Malkavian only. But I always wondered why people thought it was Malkavian only. This is why.
Right.
Right? Just they mention a new talent here. I think it's most likely it's where it was introduced. And it's not just for them.
Yeah. Alertness versus awareness. All right. So, cool. That's the end of that book. It's an interesting read. So next week, our review is actually a bit of a chunkier, more to digest piece of material. It's a hardcover book, and it's called Veil of Night. Now, Veil of Night is a book about basically the Middle East during the Dark Ages. So it's going to be filled with lots of terms that maybe we're not super familiar with, or the origins of some stuff that we've talked about in earlier podcasts. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it because it's been sitting on my bookshelf and just calling to me.
And I promise we're just going to condense it. Some of the things before, I think in 2020, me and Nate talked about it. Not diving as deep into the history, but giving the gist of it and letting you dive deep when you get the book.
Yeah, right.
So just let you know what's going on in it. We'll be as specific as necessary, but ultimately, we also, if it's boring to us, it's boring to you. And there were a couple times we were like reading stuff like going, eh.
Yeah. Right. I honestly, some of this Dark Ages stuff, like, you know, I'm beginning to, you know, have a real enjoyment for some of this Dark Ages material, but honestly, it's taken me a while. And, you know, when you've already reviewed two clan books, man, sometimes the third one, you're like, all right, like, God, I got to slog through this again. But yeah, I mean, we're going to try very diligently to remain within the confines of the review, right? We do want to talk about stuff as it pertains to our experiences, but our job is to look at these books and review them and present to you, like, is this a worthwhile book for your collection? Do you need this for your game? Is it going to help you as a storyteller? Not necessarily give you a history lesson, because, you know, 40 minutes into a history lesson, I want to fall asleep. So, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? But yeah, so this is a brand new book for me. Veil of Night is not a book I've ever even cracked. I've completely held off. So fresh perspective, don't know anything about the material aside from it is like probably foundationally where like the Ashira and everything comes from. So we'll see.
I mean, we're going to be talking about the, I won't say it.
Bob's sitting there looking all speculative. All right, cool. Well, thank you folks for listening. Now, just so you're aware, we're going to have a podcast interview with Thomas from Flyos Games coming out in a couple of weeks, corresponding pretty closely to when Chapters becomes available on Kickstarter. So that will not be a regular day. It'll be a different day than you're used to. But that's, you know, for hush hush behind the scenes reasons. So keep a lookout for that. We may be having Mr. Dawkins come back on to talk about Cult of the Blood Gods in the near future. So that's cool. That's something that you can look forward to. So, all right. Anything else, Bob?
Not at all.
Boom.
Not at all.
That's a podcast, and, folks.
Did I lie?
I don't know.
I lied.
Did you?
I did. There's something I wanted to clear up, actually. I almost slipped my mind. I said I was going to do and talk about it.
Right.
We mentioned previously, and it's going to catch some people off guard if you didn't see it, if not catch it. In our Chicago by Night review, we talked about disciplines going beyond five. We weren't fans of it not being there. We still hold that stance, but I want to hit something home here. We didn't make the system. So it's hard to judge a system that you didn't create, right? Because right. You just know whether you like a change or you don't. And we need to make this noted that the level fives in V5 are powerful.
Right.
In fact, they're rather potent. Not many game. Well, I can't say that. you know, the thing that was told to me that I kind of groove with, how many games have you played in where people from the start ended up playing to get up to level 5?
Yeah.
Not many. Definitely not many for me. And the ones that do tend to not want to even use that power because of how powerful it is, right? And that's usually the way it goes for us. So that's one logic. The other end is you condense it down all you like, but if you look, they made some 6s and 7s available at 5.
Right.
Right? There's some powers that are represented in that. It's just what's worthwhile, easier to do, or makes sense that they have from the perspective of the overall product. We don't have the perspective because we're not writing the material.
Right.
So we're just like you reviewing it and seeing what goes on. That said, still want our Methuselahs to be Methuselahs, and we want them to be mightier than a prince in a book.
Yeah.
That's valid. However, folks, that doesn't mean it's bad product.
No.
Got to underline that. That's the not
truth
what
we're
saying.
The truth is, it's different. And where we may have some personal hangups, you know, my advice to you would be, when you're telling a story, you know, you should do your rock solid best not to hinge that story on powers. I'm not saying that that's something I'm capable of. I'm not saying that I'm going to take my own advice, but it is different. It's not better. It's not worse. It's different.
Why is the deal? I'll let Nate and Dawkins talk it all up about the highbrow. Mucky muck. It's not about everybody's included. Whatever. Get in the corner. This is Kane Bro talk. This is Kane Bro talk right now. If you're telling me, Bob, that when I play V5 and Helena Troy walks around, me and my coterie have a chance, hell yeah, keep it at 5. We're going to do it. And I tell you what, the rules back you, bro. Now is the time of the Kane Bro unite. That is the system that lets you do it. Go for it. Because that's what they're not seeing. And I'm telling you, do it. Do it. Because I want you to note something. The only way a system works is if you can break it and they can improve it. So if I'm correct, and all the gaming community has to get involved with this somewhere, and you have that super combative character or that guy that likes to play him and can really get at being a sheet mechanic, and there's two others with him, and they sit down and do the same thing, and suddenly we start hearing complaints that Helena Troy doesn't last past round one, that lets me laugh at Dawkins. Right? It just say, and it's not even true. I wouldn't even laugh at him as much as it would be. I would love to see what amazing development from that goes. One, he's going to tell you because he's had told you because we've told you. That's not what the game's about.
Right.
That is not what the game's about. It's not arena combat. However, we're Kane Bro moment. I'm a recovering Kane Bro.
Right.
And I gotta tell you, to my heart, I know for a fact, if suddenly the storyteller's like, you can call me Portia. I had that name once upon a time, but I'm Helen of Troy, and you're going to do what I say. Yeah, you have a chance to roll initiative and jumper. And, right. and you have an argument point to go, hey, man, I stand a fair shot.
Right.
Okay. And the storyteller is free to do one thing. We're going to narrate this scene.
Yeah, yeah.
You lose.
That's definitely. I've been in that situation on more than one occasion, and I've gotten to the point where I have no problem with that. Sometimes you just don't tug on Superman's cape. That's just the truth. However, I am of a firm belief that I want a system that allows me to do more. I still don't really truly understand the condensing of disciplines. I don't think it does anything. And that's just my opinion. I feel that taking away the uniqueness of the individual clans and lumping them up into, you know, a basic 8 set of disciplines, maybe that's good for your printing, but I don't see how that is an improvement for me as a player of a game, because I'm playing a game. And truth be told, like, I want powers. I want cool things. I don't understand why you take them away.
Here's where I left the door open, right? And mm-hmm. I know you do too,
because right.
I'll make you leave the door open. UML's leaving the door open here. It's on this. You start at 1 through 5. Guess what? This game started 1 through 5.
Right.
The very first Vampire the Masquerade book did not have level 6+ discipline powers
no.
in it.
No, it didn't.
It waited, right? It's the same format. They're going to match it when the demand for more is there. They're going to match it when they do it. But don't be surprised if they match it by renaming some powers and still keeping them 1 through 5, but available only to these clans.
Right.
You know, unique to these people. That's, guys, sky's the limit.
Right.
Right? That's something that Thomas Sofalio's game is big about. We're big about hearing and saying. Sky is the limit. Your imagination and pocketbook will dictate what is needed.
Right.
So for the writers, they need this feed forward. Not feedback, feed forward. Like Nate, passionate about having more options, right? But you said more options. Didn't say it had to go above the 5 cap.
No.
Right? Just more options.
Right.
He said tie it to clans. give us back the uniqueness they had because powers did that. Well, if something else could do that, would you accept it? Of course you would.
Right.
But let's see that development. And that's where we're at. We're in the ballpark with you.
Right.
But we're just asking that verbiage to change from demand to negotiate.
Right. You know, tell me how, you know, my opinion is I always try to look at it from the perspective of I'm a storyteller who's been running a game and I was in V20 and now I want to take my players who have been playing for however long they've been playing and I want to move them forward into this new game, this new rule set. Now, this is just an example, you know, but it's probably one everybody is experiencing. Many people are experiencing. So now how do I take those characters who have maybe acquired material throughout their play? You know, maybe the Tremere with, you know, five different paths of thaumaturgy. Now they don't have that. You know, how am I going to tell them how am I going to extol the virtues of this new game system if they can do less? If they're not able to do as much, I want to give them more nuance, more experiences, more stuff that they can do to explore the world. But if I tell them like, hey, we're going to move you over here to this game system, but like, we're going to take all the stuff away. How is that a virtue to me? So that's just my opinion. I'm not necessarily saying I'm right. I'm not saying everybody has to share that, but that's just my perspective.
I'm going to add a little icing to it. Fact of the matter remains that the majority of people who play this game rely on stats and rules. That is a fact.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there would be no rules and stats.
Right.
Right? That's why you revamped them, is because you were listening to what the fans thought would be good things and you wanted to add your own. That's smart. The other thing is when a storyteller, though, is using this material, and that's my most common perspective as the storyteller. I need something my players can go by and look up and go, oh, that was fair, without me having to say it.
Right.
It's my ST insurance. It's also a quality check for me. What does that mean? In that scenario that I keep beating to death, we'll just say my elder. I don't want to keep, because it's a great character. I just don't want to keep bringing up Helen of Troy. But if I have a Methuselah and I have to make it out of the system and I do following the guideline they did for her, and for whatever reason the players are hunting this elder down, right? I decide I'm going to make my own version of Sabbat wannabe anarchs, right? That's what they are. That's what the players decide to do, and they're going to do that. One of them is hunting elders. They go to do it. I want them to be able to say it's a win.
Right.
Players love it when the rules, their actions follow what the rules say they can do. They love it when they win by a die. A lot of people think it's cheesy, but welcome to a game, not a movie.
Right.
There's the reason for it. They get that die roll, they achieve something. Once they achieve it, they could turn around and go, man, how close are we to death? What right. happens if that roll didn't come up that? What if that elder didn't get the 10-6? They even used the level 7 power. You know.
It's like they feel like they won by their grit and a little bit of luck.
And because the tension's there. You can right. have all the great narration in the world to build tension, stress, everything. I've never heard more cheers in a hushed room than when initiative was rolled and a player won in my life.
Right.
Right? Over someone they knew was untakeable, right? Or when a storyteller rolls the soak and he picks up his bucket of 15 dice and drops it and only gets 2 successes to the Bruja Neonate's mighty leap off the table, blew all his blood into one blow, and gets 11 successes, right?
It's
people
true.
People love triumphing over the ink that is right there. And to us, we'll call them pros, the professionals, right? In the industry, we forget that we are those people still. Right?
Right.
That deep down, we still love triumphing over ink as well. And that's where I think the argument is coming from the 5 stats. That's what people can't get out, is that that's the passion piece that really explains all the mechanical hullabaloo.
Well, and also I think just real quick statement. I think for me, a part of my issue with it is trying to understand how the actual logic of the world has changed, right? Where you have a character that for all intents and purposes, for 4 versions of the game, they could do very specific things. They were capable of doing things. These things existed in the world, right? We, for instance, I'm a Giovanni. I have necromancy. This is something that is unique essentially to my clan. And now it is no longer unique. In fact, it is completely different. So to me, it's like trying to comprehend, like, I feel like it's a Mandela effect moment, right? Like, wasn't it Berenstain Bears and now it's Berenstain Bears? I don't understand.
I agree. I see your point. What I want you to try to imagine is this. They wanted to come up with something that was new. Let's recite what didn't work. Mm-hmm. Slapping revised didn't work in coming across as new.
Right?
Doing a different version saying it's V20 didn't come across as new. Beckett's Jihad Diary didn't say it came across new. We just expanded the stories to say the world still exists.
Right.
What was going to make a different product feel new for an old group of players who've been with this every step of the way? You keep the same story, check, check, check. You expand upon it, checks across the board. But if you kept the same rules, it would still feel the same.
Right.
No matter what you did, it would still feel the same.
I definitely get you on that.
So by updating the rules, they're tricking your mind. It is a trick. Because you have to relearn a system, therefore it is new. Because it is new, you're new to the stories, and your mind's now open to where it once was closed, to different aspects and angles off of what's going with this material. Open just enough to allow us to wiggle in and convince you one way or the other. Right. I get what they're doing.
Right. And
that is what they're doing.
For me, I've had to logic, in my own mind, the misconception is that I have a problem with V5. I don't. I like V5. I just think V5 is kind of its own thing. I enjoy V5. I think it's a great system. I think it's a lot of fun. I just have a hard time reconciling it with older versions. That's just me. Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed our wheel spinning debate here. And cool. We'll be back next week, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, until then, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
Thank you for listening to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. If you like our podcast and you'd like to help support our show, consider backing us at patreon.com/25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. We offer reward tiers of additional Patreon-only podcasts, t-shirts, and personalized gaming experiences. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and go to our website, utilitymuffinlabs.com, for links to all of our social media, additional podcasts, and more. If you'd like to chat with us, submit a title for review, promote your gaming-related stuff, or anything else you can think of, email me at nathan@utilitymuffinlabs.com. Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.